What's good, everybody? Welcome in to the Abstract Dynasty Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm AJ. Welcome into the first episode of the 2023 season. We are currently at the end of July as we speak. We've got training camp fully underway. We've got running back holdouts. We've got quarterback deals. And we've got Joe Burrow already getting hurt the first couple weeks of training camp. Exciting time to be alive. Total transparency here. I am sitting up at 12:30 in the morning because we have a road trip as a family that we were going on tomorrow. And getting this podcast rolling has been really eating at me. So couldn't wait any longer. I wanted to get something up, get something cooking as the season draws nearer and nearer. And, you know, I think we've got some time between now and kickoff in September. We'll get to all that stuff. But this is primarily a Dynasty Fantasy Football podcast. So kind of wanted to start with some Dynasty content. And with the offseason waning already, there's going to be no more important information than what to look for in startup drafts. So this first episode is going to be about what your approach is going to be for a startup draft. We'll talk about some format. We'll talk about some current landscaping, things that I'm noticing with potential values, deep positions, and maybe some edges that we can find coming up. I'll try not to be painfully granular, but that is my specialty, and I do like to draw a wide net around things just to be all-inclusive for anybody. But enough intro, let's go here. So you want to join a dynasty league. You know what? Me too. If you're anything like me, you feel that itch at some point during every offseason. Camp starts, hype starts, we're past the draft, trades start flying in your local leagues. As long as I can afford the time and the money required, it's a great guilty pleasure. And because I go through this every offseason, I think it's important to take notice of how you approach things year over year, because we're constantly growing and changing as players. And as should your draft strategy, there are things that will be replicable year over year, but there are also smaller trends, data, learning experiences that do influence your decision and can make you a better player in the long run. Let's start with the things that really don't change all that much. First on the list would be your format. General consensus for most leagues is going to be some type of PPR scoring, 12 teams, start about 10 players. It can vary, but for the most part, that's the box you're trying to fit in. And in general, if you're seeking advice outside of that potential box, you should probably be saying that explicitly to get the most accurate feedback. It's always annoying, too, when people use the word standard, because years ago, the word standard used to mean non-PPR, and now that PPR scoring has become the standard, we don't have anything to call the thing that most players don't play anymore. So in case you don't know, gaining points per reception just stabilizes the game, makes it a lot more balanced across positions and from team to team. Because without it, in the end, you're really just chasing touchdowns, which is sometimes fun, but touchdowns can be kind of fluky. They're not always static from year to year, and it's kind of hard to build strategy off of that much randomness. So as you go further down this rabbit hole, you can get really intricate with the scoring. There's going to be all types of different PPR scoring. You can go half full. You can do tiered PPR where running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends all get different values. You can play super flex leagues. You can play two quarterback leagues. You can award points for first down. You can have big play bonus. You can have really anything you want to do. Not all of these are going to be game changing though. For the most part, there's only a couple of these that really do shape the core foundation of what you should be building for. The first is Superflex, growing ever more popular. Technically, it isn't required to be a two-quarterback system, but because of the quarterback eligibility in Superflex, this definitely changes the way that we play the game. I personally prefer Superflex. Just about every league I'm in is still Superflex. And the reason for that is because without it, in my experience, you know, quarterbacks just tend to be kind of devalued. You can kind of kick them well down the board, not really responsible for that position, and you could probably still end up fine with a couple of guys you drafted outside the top 10 rounds, which is a viable strategy for other things, but I prefer the balance that it gives the rest of the league, giving that extra tier of value to a position. And the other one that's really going to change things is going to be any type of tiered PPR scoring with or without a tight end premium. So tiered PPR is usually going to be a half point awarded to running backs for receptions, a full point for wide receivers, and 1.5 points for tight ends. It can vary, but in general, you really want to be wary of when you have these multiplicative bonuses that you can gain over other positions. Doesn't mean you're going to field a whole team of tight ends, but it is something to consider when one tight end catch is worth 3 running back catches. However, it's only 50% more valuable than a wide receiver target. So there's that dynamic in play. I'm going to get it right out in front of it just because I feel like I talk about this endlessly. But when it comes to tight end premium, if your tight end premium in respect to the wide receivers is only 50% bonus, that's a nice bonus. It's a nice feather in the cap, but it's really not a seismic advantage for me. And the reason is because in the current state of the NFL, there just aren't enough tight ends that can capitalize on this bonus consistently to actually reap that benefit, because there's only so many elites. You've got your Kelsey, you've got your Andrews, you've got maybe Kyle Pitts one day. And other than that, I mean, with the exception of TJ Hockenson gobbling up a lot of receptions this year, there just aren't enough guys to do that. So you're still getting that point bonus from those tight ends, but it's going to come in more peaks and valleys because they just don't have that stable target floor. Like, forget fantasy. They just don't catch as many passes as receivers. That's just what it is. But once you start getting into, you know, 2x tight end premium, and it can get pretty crazy out there, that's when I really start taking notice and adjust accordingly. But every other type of scoring format variety, I mean, you can do between 4-point or 6-point passing touchdown. All of these for me are going to be small adjustments for miscellaneous settings. I'm talking like maybe 5% or less. You don't want to totally thrust yourself into different settings for different reasons and chasing these points that can distract you from actually building your team the way you probably should. These types of scoring are usually going to be a tiebreaker for me more often than not if I'm picking between a couple of players at a given spot. Although I'll say the point for first down, whether it's rushing or receiving, I do start to adjust for that. So we've talked about how players are scoring points, about how many players are scoring points. Well, that's going to depend on how many you're starting and how big your league is. So as I said, 12 is the standard. You can see 18-team leagues. I mean, you can see 8-team leagues. You can see 16-team leagues. There's kind of a sliding scale relationship between these high and low ends of the scale. Basically, the fewer number of teams in a league, the more your elite studs are going to matter because everyone's team is good. You're going to need that small percentage bump for each one of those positions to give yourself an advantage week to week. And you're going to want every positional advantage you can find. But as you start sliding further above 10 and 12, you get to 14, 16, 18 team leagues, depth is going to be at a premium because the same talent pool that's very concentrated in a small league is very spread out in a deep league. So you're going to be probably more conservative on average, especially when it comes to trades. You're going to need to be able to make sure that you can get through the season, depending on how many you're starting, with a startable lineup every week. You're going to need options. Suspensions happen. Injuries happen. Shoot, a couple years ago, COVID took a whole bunch of players out. That was a terrible, terrible fantasy year. In general, it's something that you're just going to have to monitor. It takes a lot of practice. You're going to approach trades differently. You're going to approach drafting differently. Like in those leagues, you're starting wide receiver 4s and 5s with regularity. Like those guys have a little bit more value in that deep of a league. Then of course we have, how many players you're actually starting in a lineup. 10, 12, 14, just depends on how much. You can also get cute with this with, how many flex positions you add or how many super flex positions. If your league only requires one starting running back, you are covered. That doesn't mean draft only 2 running backs, but it means that you do have some more flexibility week to week on the back end to play with injuries, to play with different matchups. that you might not have in somewhere where you might need to start three. I actually have a league. One of my favorite ones is that it's a quarterback, a super flex, and everything else in the league is just regular flex spots. So you're just picking the best players. You don't have any positional constraints. It's a lot of fun. Really, you're just accounting for weekly demand. The last thing I'll say before we start getting into, you know, the relevancies of the 2023 season is just when you're going into this, whether you're new or you're seasoned vet or you're just trying to do something different, you should just have some type of plan, but it should be a flexible, tangible plan. There's a lot of places that will tell you, oh, you got to trade out of the first round because depth is everything. You want future picks. You want to stay young. Or you should be value lurking, letting people pass on old veterans, push towards a championship. And every type of buzzword from rebuild to productive struggle to all-in contender, it doesn't matter. There are a lot of ways to play this game. All of them work with reasonable success from time to time. But this game is all about opportunities. Luck and opportunities. Things will happen in the draft, during the season, during championship week even. It's just about examining every opportunity that comes your way and having a plan and not being afraid to change that plan when an opportunity arises. All right, we're out of the bland stuff. Let's actually talk about the relevant positions this year. So 2023 landscape. We'll start with everybody's favorite golden goose is the quarterback. Again, all of this stuff that I'm going to be talking about is going to be, for the most part, super flex. I guess we could call tight end premium part of the standard here as well. But if you play in super flex, you know that it's a quarterback-driven meta. Just like in the NFL, quarterbacks are at a premium. There's only a certain number of them that can do X, Y, and Z. And the fear of not having one can definitely leave you sleepless at night. Quarterbacks for the foreseeable future will be dominating the top positions of a startup draft. Anywhere from, you know, 8 to 10 can go in the first round. Could be more. And some people are going to want to double up on those elite quarterbacks. The reason why I'm not huge on trading out of the first round this year isn't because it's not going to pay off down the line. It absolutely can. But when this number of what I consider to be elite quarterbacks is already sitting at the top of the draft, and in a 12-team league, you're talking about maybe 75% of the first round, you're pretty much going to be happy any way you slice it if you get one of those guys. If you don't get one of those guys, there's other options there. You can examine that. But nobody's going to be upset with a Lamar Jackson, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Herbert, Joe Burrow. In years past, it did sort of feel like we were placing quarterbacks up there that we were hoping to become more like Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen. But in general, I think these guys do belong there. So I don't feel like it's a misappropriation of value to not be trading back when there's already elite players right in your fingertips. Don't make it complicated. You can take these guys and have a nice day. However, what makes this year different, after that first round, I personally am not feeling the mad dash for quarterbacks that we have in the past. For the first time that I can remember, we have a great combination of depth and value dispersed all the way up and down the draft at the quarterback position. Some of that was precipitated by, you know, the kind of crazy quarterback season that we had last year, but you've got your top 8, top 10 guys, something like that. That's pretty much going to dominate the first 15 picks of your draft. Then right after that, you're going to have your young quarterbacks. You've got all of this year's rookie quarterbacks, Anthony Richardson, Bryce Young, CJ Stroud. But then you also have some of the other guys that were rookies last year and the year before. You've got Mac Jones, who most people agree is going to be a little bit better this year. Kenny Pickett looked okay down the stretch. Brock Purdy was a sensation before he got hurt. Even guys like Sam Howell are getting a chance to start. And then even further down, you're looking at your Aaron Rodgers, your Jared Goff, Geno Smith, Matthew Stafford, guys that you can confidently put in your lineup. Even if you go like crazy late, I'm talking like Gardner Minshew might be the week one starter in Indianapolis. That's going to have some type of value if that comes to fruition. Colt McCoy is the odds on favorite to hold down the fort as we wait for Kyler Murray to come back from injury. There are tons of quarterbacks available this year to the point where I feel like I have a lot of flexibility at a position that usually you have to sacrifice something to make sure you're okay. It's refreshing, honestly, and I'd really like that to continue. But we'll see whether or not it will. Quarterback is the only position that frequently requires you to expect wild pick variance when it actually comes to picking during the draft. So if you look at regular ADPs, depending on how sharp your league is, you're going to have some wild variance where quarterbacks, quote unquote, should go. So if you're targeting, say, Kirk Cousins, whose ADP suggests he should be there for you at the beginning of the sixth round, he may not be there for you because Cousins is at the top of a tier of quarterback that is not an elite option, not a youthful option, but probably one of the most consistent weekly options that you can have. And anybody that's interested in contending early is probably going to put a premium on that. Now, this is a phenomenon you probably are aware of if you've done startups before. You're like, wait, why did that guy go? When you start thinking in terms of tiers, groups of players that kind of cascade in different paces, you start to understand like why guys go where they are. But for this specific position, it really is a bit more pronounced just because the penalty of not having two startable quarterbacks in a super flex league is detrimental. So for quarterback, really just plan ahead. Plan ahead, make sure that you have outs. If a guy goes earlier than you are expecting him to, you should know where your contingencies are. If quarterbacks are not going, some of us might tell you to continuously draft quarterbacks and just flip them later. That's definitely a way to go about it because they are one of the most valuable assets. I think that's less the case this year, again, because I'm speaking to the depth at the position, but having extra quarterbacks is always going to be a powerful negotiating position for someone that needs one. Just say. Now, I guess on quarterbacks, I should also talk about the rushing quarterback, which is very much in vogue. Especially these days, it was kind of a novelty in the beginning of the 2010s, and now it's like expected. Quarterbacks are more mobile and athletic than ever. It seems like just about every good quarterback these days can rush, can do something with their legs, even if they're not creating outside the pocket. You know, they're breaking contain and they're running for a few extra yards, which is valuable for fantasy. When it comes to rushing quarterbacks versus your traditional pocket quarterbacks, is tread carefully when you're diving headfirst onto this, especially when we're talking about long-term. If you take, let's say, Justin Fields, who put up a historic rushing season for a quarterback, he was averaging 76 rushing yards a game, which is crazy for a quarterback. But in terms of points, that's only about 7.5 points, which is good. We'll take that. If you compare Justin Fields rushing to every quarterback league-wide, the average passing yardage in a game was 192.2, which is about 8.7 points. Which doesn't sound like a huge discrepancy, but we are talking about every quarterback in the league, from Patrick Mahomes to Josh Johnson, versus one of the most prolific rushing seasons we've ever seen at the quarterback position. The long and the short is, it's always going to be more efficient to throw the ball than it is to pass the ball, which I'm sure a lot of you already know. If you listen to any type of NFL media, any type of analytics, a lot of that data is relevant in fantasy. It's not always a one-to-one, but a lot of what we do is marry the statistics that are leading the industry with the game that we play. Even without the data, it should probably be instinctual that when you're throwing a ball, it's going to travel a lot faster than it is if you were to run it. Also, you have multiple pass options on a play, whereas running, only one person can propel the ball. All I'm saying is, I will take rushing from a quarterback all day, but I want that to support the passing offense. Justin Fields threw for a little over 2,200 yards last year. That is unacceptable in 2023. Obviously not his fault. There was a lot of things going wrong there, but there's a reason why the Bears weren't very good and why I don't think that level of rushing is sustainable going forward. At the end of the day, teams would rather let you scramble around than cut them up deep, intermediate, and short, because it's just easier to defend and it's less efficient over time. Not to mention, they're opening up to more injuries. We've seen this happen with Lamar Jackson over the years. He has started rushing less and less. Dak Prescott's has been non-existent, although technically there's talk of him starting to rush a little bit more. I am a little wary of Justin Fields, Daniel Jones, Sam Howell, and Desmond Ridder. And I only throw those last two in because one of Sam Howell's big calling cards coming out of college was his ability to rush. When he lost all his receivers, he took it into his own hands and he ran a lot. And I say Ridder because Marcus Mariota was the quarterback for the Falcons there last year. He has since moved on. Marcus Mariota was actually one of my comps for Desmond Ridder coming out. Just a decently athletic guy. I think he's a little better than Mariota is. All I'm saying is, rushing is floor. It's a stabilizing attribute that's going to carry your performance week to week. And you might get into the end zone once in a while. Sometimes more than once in a while. There are exceptions. You know who they are. But generally speaking, year over year, it is very difficult for quarterbacks to finish in the top echelon of the position being carried by their rushing production. It's just way easier for them to do it with their arm. So if you're drafting in a four-point touchdown league, which most people believe makes the rushing quarterbacks that rush for touchdowns a cheat code, and you're staring down Daniel Jones versus Kirk Cousins, obviously you should be looking at age, but in terms of just their weekly output, it feels yucky to not take Daniel Jones just because he runs. But there's a reason why Kirk Cousins, even at 34 years old, is one of the most consistent, stable quarterbacks out there. And Daniel Jones is not. All right, enough about quarterbacks. Let's do some fun stuff. Wide receivers. Wide receivers, man, the community is overcorrecting hard for wide receivers. And I don't mean that as in a bad way. I'm just saying, we haven't done this in a while, folks. Okay, I've been playing a little while here. This is the first time probably since 2013, 2014, 2015. I mean, like, somewhere in there we've had, you know, Odell Beckham, Julio Jones, DeAndre Hopkins, Antonio Brown. I'm talking dudes. Dudes at the position that make you go, yeah, you know what? I don't need to think about this wide receiver running back debate. I'm good with this guy. We've got some guys here now, and we've got some more guys that we're expecting to take that step. And that is immediately evident when you look at ADP. You have two guys generally going mid to late in the first round in Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson. But then in the second round, you see a whole bunch of wide receivers going. It's just wide receiver, quarterback, quarterback, wide receiver. And we'll get to why that is with the next position, but there's a lot to like here. It just seems like every year, college ranks just keep spitting out more and more great wide receivers. The league is definitely not hurting for them, and neither should you be. Now, it's not actually accurate to say that you should fade the most deep position, which in this case is wide receiver, because of its depth, because, you know, you'll usually be fine, you'll figure it out. That's not really the way to go in a neutral situation. Obviously, you should be making that decision pick by pick. But there are many tiers of wide receivers, and many of those tiers are very fat. And really what you're looking for when you're drafting wide receivers is you're trying to draft from the top of that tier and a little bit towards the middle. You want to leave some of those bottom guys for either best pick available later or just, you know, disadvantaging somebody else that maybe didn't take the opportunity to take the top guys that you did. The depth is still notable, though. It's always been my personal recommendation to play in leagues that require three starting wide receivers, not flexes, but three starting. It's very easy to find wide receivers in terms of just starting filling out a starting lineup. It still is one of the more flexible positions. As it pertains further down the board, I'm okay with a lot of guys towards the top. I'm not in love. This happens every year. I'm not in love with the young wide receivers that kind of litter the fourth, fifth round. Namely, you know, you have your rookies this year, Quentin Johnson, Jordan Addison, and then you got guys from last year. You got Treylon Burks, George Pickens, Christian Watson. There's nothing wrong with these players. I like them. I just think personally, a lot of them, you are chasing that upside there. There's really not there's a little more that can go wrong here if you're planning on starting these guys out of the box. So I find that these guys always pair well with some of the older veteran wide receivers that are still producing like studs. You got your Tyreek Hill, Cooper Kupp, Davante Adams, maybe still get another year out of DeAndre Hopkins. But I usually feel good when I do that, and I stack one of these guys with another young guy that's a little more dependable. And the reason I bring that up specifically here is that those aforementioned wide receivers that are older are currently and always will be undervalued, because that's how the community plays Dynasty. On the eve of a given player's 27th birthday, someone sneaks into the databases that run all these trade calculators and they chop all of their trade value in half. I understand the projection. I understand the formulas involved. I'm just saying Dynasty players are afraid of certain numbers. If you have any reasonable expectation of maybe trying to compete, doesn't mean that you need to be all in, but if you like where your team is, don't be afraid of taking a good player that you might need. Remember, this is all about examining opportunities as they come your way, because rosters change all the time. You don't know where your roster is going to be by mid-season. You don't know where it's going to be by next season. And if you do know that answer, you're probably building either too young or too old. You're not married to any of these players. If by mid-season, your team's just not coming together and you happen to take, you know, Davante Adams or something, okay, he cost you what? A fifth round pick? You had young studs everywhere else. It was worth taking a chance. Didn't work out. All right, flip him to a contender. You don't need to bring home two ones and a second for a guy that could win somebody their league, because the return you're going to get on that, which is probably going to be, you know, mid to late first plus a second, those picks are going to land you right where you would have drafted Davante Adams anyway. Which, by the way, is where that Quentin Johnson, Jordan Addison tier wide receiver is right now without even playing a down. I can go on and on about this for other positions, but specifically it matters for wide receiver because they're so damn many. You can get into so many creative positions just by having a plan and understanding the concept of potentially turning one of the deepest positions into a massive strength. Okay. Now it's time for apparently no one's favorite position anymore, the running backs. Despite everything that we've been taught as fantasy players, this position is in transition. It's taken a massive hit value-wise, whether you are, you know, pro running back or zero running back strat. We're in a brave new world. There is only one running back going in the top 14 picks, and that is Mr. Bijan Robinson himself. After that, you've got Christian McCaffrey, and in my opinion, you still got Jonathan Taylor, and it's gone. It's gone. It's all gone. There's no more running backs here anymore. I had mentioned it subtly in the wide receiver portion that there's a reason why the wide receivers are going so high, and it's actually because they're filling the void that the running back position has left behind. So what does this mean? Do running backs just suck now? Well, if you ask certain parts of the community, they'll say, ha, told you so. Wideout master race, the superior beings. I don't really feel that way. I've always really been about running backs. I just see this as being able to have your cake and eat it too. There's no way to split it. An elite player is an elite player. Just because of the position designation on him, if you're still getting 16 to 20 points per game, that's a good player. I don't care what position he plays. I'm still going to draft them accordingly. There's only so many running backs to do that. Yeah, there's only so many wide receivers that do that too. I won't profess myself to be a completely dense idiot, though. I think I've evolved a little bit. I do have to concede that, at least based on recent trends, the running back two position is a lot more present in some of the later rounds of your draft. So maybe a couple years ago, I would try to get two top running backs out of the first four rounds. Maybe I'm happy with one out of the top three. And then I'll approach the rest of the position accordingly. If I'm going to do that, I'd rather push that into a quarterback or a wide receiver advantage. But honestly, outside of that top three running back tier, being able to wait till the third round to get a pretty decent running back is, I'm all about that. The youth there will actually start to go pretty quickly with, you know, your Jahmyr Gibbs, Travis Etienne, Kenneth Walker, and then it's kind of a cliff after that. Just something to be aware of if you are interested in investing at that position. I say it all the time, just like I'm not afraid of drafting a good player that's a wide receiver, I'm not afraid of doing it with a running back either. I will draft running backs on a rebuilding squad. I do not care. They are always marketable. They are always valuable. And they don't suck. They put up good points, especially if they're pass catchers. Not to dive too deep into the fantasy theory of that, but I mean, the more opportunities, the more touches you can tog, whether it's, you know, on the ground or through the air, the more stable you're going to be week to week. And it's also something that wide receivers almost never do. Debo Samuel did it once, and since then, really hasn't happened, has it? So that's it. You heard it from me. All of these GMs and owners are fucking stupid. I don't know why they're not paying their running backs. I jest. I will say that going forward, as we get more running back classes drafted in, I do think the days of trading away a running back for a return of three first round picks is probably over. I think, especially if you're playing super flex, as we're talking here, people identify that you're getting a lot of the same explosiveness from your running backs as you are your quarterbacks, but quarterbacks last a hell of a lot longer. They're not quite as injury prone because they take a lot less of a beating on average. Just depends on what team you play for and who your offensive line is, apparently. But yeah, we might be done with that, with sending the three or four first round picks for Christian McCaffrey type prospects, which is fine. I'm fine with that. I'm still going to want the point output of a running back as long as we're required to start them. So welcome to the new frontier. But you know what position does suck is tight end. So tight end is completely format dependent. And it's just obnoxious. Each league, and even from person to person, not even just league to league, but person to person, people will always give you varied opinions on what the value of a tight end is. As I kind of said before, once you start messing with the format enough, it does start to matter, but small bonuses for a tight end is not going to compensate in the long run for just the lack of viable options that we have. So you have Mark Andrews, you have Travis Kelce. Eventually, hopefully, Kyle Pitts will be useful. But with such wild variance between players and leagues, it can be hard to nail down what a tight end is actually worth. I kind of equate a tight end in a tight end premium league to kind of like that top end to mid running back one. I mean, they're dudes. They score a lot of points. They're weekly forces on your squad and deserve to be valued as such. But if it's not one of those top two to three guys, I don't want to hear about it. Like, I'm not offering you multiple firsts for Dallas Goedert. I'm just not doing it. I think George Kittle is undervalued as all hell, but he's not worth that price tag either. I hope that this past season that we've had in 22 is what's going to be going forward, because for a long time, it was very much feast or famine at the position, to where it was just literally don't bother, draft late unless you get one of the early guys. But there's some semblance of a mid-tier forming currently. You've got TJ Hockenson, Dallas Goedert, Pat Freiermuth, Darren Waller, George Kittle, David Njoku, Evan Engram. That's a solid, I mean, between those, what's that, seven names? Plus the two that I'm plus three up top, that's 10. That's almost a full roster in a 10-team league, in a 12-team league. So, I mean, at least if we're getting to a point where every team has a justifiably acceptable option to start rather than just picking them up off the waiver wire every week, I'm for that. I'm for that idea. So the case is still going to be, though, if you are going to fade a position, to just not worry about it, let it be tight end, because the vast majority of leagues only require you to start one, if any. It's not always a given. And especially with, you know, the youth that's in play. We got a lot of late round tight ends. I say that cautiously because the last time we had a quote generational tight end draft wasn't all that great. But the consensus seems to be that we're going to have a pretty good stable of guys in the league for years to come after this draft. So definitely there's a lot more deep options. Again, I already spoke about with the receivers. I'm not afraid of taking Travis Kelce if I'm going to be anywhere close to needing him. You will go broke betting on age for players. Like, I understand you want to be out a year ahead. Absolutely, I understand. If you have contingencies and the value's right, there's nothing wrong with doing that. But if you're waiting on Travis Kelce to slow down, I mean, based on what? He just had his best season ever as the unquestioned number one in the offense. No Tyreek Hill to pull coverage for him. He's a dude. It's not as if he's not getting older. Like, this is happening, and the Chiefs are more managing his touches. You can see that when you're watching the game, but if you're just staring at it and waiting for it to die, I can't help you. But on that note, that's been the first episode of the 2023 season for the Abstract Dynasty Fantasy Football Podcast. The next few episodes, I plan on going over some tiers by position. I do tiers a little bit differently than the average fantasy player. So I think it's worth at least, you know, exploring at least my thought process on that stuff as we get into the year. I have a lot of travel coming up too, so I'm going to do my very best to make uploads on Mondays and then give myself time to research stuff throughout the week, you know, make sure I cover my ass, know what I'm talking about, and then, you know, be a father and do work stuff. But on that note, I'm going to go to sleep, and until next time, we're all just out here getting better. I'll see you later.